Hey, I'm Jeff Kahn, and you're listening to Storyworthy, a podcast where people's pants are down and we're all masturbating. It's great.
Welcome to the Storyworthy podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from someplace kind of special, because we're on the web. We're coming to you from inside Craigslist personal ads. We're not in a physical place. We're like Jeff Bridges and Tron. The first one, not the second one, because the second one didn't really work for me. But we've been digitalized, and we've been inserted into Craigslist, and we are in the threesome section of the personal ads of Craigslist.
Wow, that is very specific, but it's true. The topic tonight is threesome, and it comes to us from writer and actor Jeff Kahn.
Yes, Jeff Kahn, and author. More importantly, author Jeff Kahn.
Oh, I said writer. Isn't that an author? Isn't a writer an author?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, if you publish, then you become an author, or are you an... I don't know. I'm
Ooh,
not
that's
clear.
True. That's the old tree in the forest. If they don't cut down a tree in the forest to publish your words, are you really a writer?
Did you put it up on YouTube? I don't know.
You know that Newsweek is going to cease their print edition at the end of the year?
And I say to myself, who was reading that anyway?
I used to read Newsweek every week.
But that's because it was on the plane. They made you read it. There was nothing else to read.
Right. I know. And it's just the only thing that bothers me, I know I sound like an old fogey about that, is like if the power goes out like that stupid TV show Revolution, all the information of the news of the past 100 years will simply disappear. Like we still have paper from 1500 allows us to trace families and land and so forth. If there is literally no paper, all that information will simply disappear.
You know what I think, Hannes?
I think
that newspaper and what you're talking about isn't nearly as interesting as a threesome.
Well, that's true.
I'm just saying.
You know, you used to have to advertise for threesomes in the newspaper. Something called the Penny Saver.
The Penny Saver. Good
and what
one.
You want is a threesome with somebody who reads the Penny Saver, because they're always hot.
And they may have an extra kitten or two for you to take home.
If you know what I'm
saying.
Speaking
of kittens, I'll say this right now. Yeah. We have a guest on tonight, writer, actor Jeff Kahn.
Yes.
And as I understand it, he can meow very well.
Really?
I don't know why this is.
Okay, I look forward to having
that
demonstrated.
It's a random piece of information.
That is pretty random.
I know. I do want to say this. Folks, if you like the Storyworthy podcast, and of course you do, it's a free podcast.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
You can go over to storyworthypodcast.com, and then you shop through Amazon that way. In other words, you click on our Amazon link, and we get a couple of cents.
Right, exactly. It helps us out. We don't judge what you buy, no matter how filthy or disgusting it is. You can also just donate money to us directly.
Well, we appreciate that a lot. And if you can't do that, you go over to iTunes, you leave us a good review. We also appreciate that.
Yeah, this is all important. So you've got a lot of threesome information over there.
Here's the
thing,
Hannes.
You have a binder full of threesome information.
I Google threesome, and how many hits did I get? Just start at the millions, guess.
Right, I just Googled it myself. And by the way, my favorite one on the first page, how to fuck up a threesome. That's hilarious to me.
286 million hits. That's
Holy
what I got.
Shit.
286 million hits. I went right to the source, Wikipedia. A threesome commonly refers to sexual activity that involves three people at the same time. We know this.
Yes.
This is nothing we don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of implicit.
So let's skip ahead. Forget Wikipedia. Let's go right to askmen.com.
Yes.
Askmen.com. Threesomes are not like regular sex. No. They require both imagination and sensitivity. If you plan on having a threesome, you need to go into the situation with some idea of what you're going to be doing.
I like the idea that when asked, men said, no, it's not like sex where I unthinkingly stick my dick out for 35 seconds and then go to sleep, not in the wet spot. No, you actually have to worry about it.
You have three rules. There's three rules to have a good threesome. Let's establish those rules. Number one. Okay, this is from the man.
Is this from Marie Claire, by the way? Because I see
from
a link.
AskMen.com.
Oh, AskMen.com. I'm sorry.
One man, two women. You're going to have sex with two women. Keep this in mind.
Uh-huh.
All three of you are going to have your own rules and limits. So you have to understand and respect one another's comfort levels. So this is the top priority when you establish your threesome rules.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have to respect the limits of the woman that you're with, because she may suddenly feel jealous. You don't know.
Yeah.
All right, let's skip ahead.
So also, the woman that you've never met before, who answered your ad on AskMen.com, She might be jealous.
The first rule is establish the rules.
Women are crazy like that.
Yes, go ahead.
Rule number two. I like this one. This is my favorite one, actually. Yes. Be as giving as you can. Now, although you may be hoping that the two women will give you 100% of their attention, the truth is that they're there to please each other as well, just as much as they're there to please you. You may end up feeling ignored, and you should do your best to get over it. Now, the best way to approach a
situation...
Let me
know when I can comment on that.
I'll let you in a minute. Okay. You want an important threesome rule to follow is that you have to forget your feelings for a moment and try to be as generous with your hands and your mouth as you can.
Ah.
See?
Well, that's always... See, this is what women wish men would do when they were just in a twosome.
Right. Well, you want to keep your hands moving and know when to penetrate at any given time. Because the thing is, once you penetrate, then the third wall has been... taken down.
It was that's a theater term for the hymen, the third wall. Fourth wall, by the way. I believe it's the fourth wall. Well, I just want to say that what was it? The two. Yeah. See, okay. This may be a cliche, but I think if there's two women and one man, those women are unlikely to be in that threesome if they don't have some curiosity about being with a woman.
That's right.
So it's always like, the guy's like, yeah, okay. And turns out you are just fucking sitting there and you better not say a goddamn word.
That brings me to rule number three.
Yes.
Always keep yourself busy. When you find that both women are busy pleasuring each other and you have nothing to do, well, you keep yourself busy. Take matters into your own hands, as it were. Caress the breasts, thighs, or vagina on one or both women. You see? So now we're talking about four breasts.
That seems like a good way to get an elbow to the eye socket. But get out of here,
kiss
asshole.
Kiss the backs of their necks. Or give oral sex to one if she's in a position that allows you to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you decide instead just to pleasure yourself for a little while, don't feel bad. That's fine. The action will come back to you soon enough. Okay, no, wait. There's actually rule number four, and I didn't even know this.
Oh, okay,
this is completely tacked on. That is, be careful with penetration. Because penetration is that old showstopper.
Well, it is if you do it right.
It automatically
you
forms.
You don't want to ever have penetration followed by the... Is there a buzzing in here? Was there a fly or my... Oh, you're penetrating. Okay, I didn't notice.
It automatically forms a series bond between you and one woman, which leaves the other woman out. And for this reason, you want to penetrate only when you're sure that both women are comfortable with it. Now, your natural inclination... Jorge, please pay attention. Eye contact. Thank you. Your natural inclination will be to pay close attention to the woman you're having sex with. But no, you mustn't focus on her entirely. No, this is about the three of you, Joe Slepsky. So please.
You've got two hands.
Kiss and touch the other woman. Look her in the eye and talk to her if the mood is appropriate. These are not my words. This is AskMen.com.
Right.
Now, be aware that you may feel overwhelmed.
How does it feel to be a complete whore? This is unlikely to work out very well for you.
You may feel overwhelmed with pleasure if you're thrusting into one woman and kissing and caressing another, meaning that you might climax more quickly than expected.
This is like every movie in the 70s with Marilyn Chambers.
Take it easy. Take it slow. Pace yourself. Don't get so excited that you lose track of all the women. And finally, really, honestly, condoms, people, please, condoms. And this is kind of weird. You have to use a separate condom with each partner. I guess that's without saying.
Yeah, I guess so. That
I don't know, man.
That seems like
a lot of work. It's a lot
of
information. I'm not sure how to dissect it, but we have a storyteller here tonight. His name is Jeff Kahn. He's written a book. He's been on a lot of movies. He has been around the block.
He actually appeared in a threesome with Marilyn Chambers.
Oh, my gosh.
When
I'm
he was 19.
I'm dying to hear this.
That is not the story.
He
decided that story was way too boring.
Anybody who brings the topic threesome is okay in my book. You know what I'm saying, Hannes?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so, yeah, we've avoided talking about whether we've ever had any threesomes.
We'll do that later. All right, you guys, wherever you are, stay tuned because Jeff Kahn is on his way up.
Storyworthy tweets. So join us on Twitter and be our friend on Facebook.
We're back. We've actually left the threesome area of Craigslist and moved into personals misconnections. and we're inside my favorite ad, which is hot gray-haired lady dancing at the Ponderosa last night. I didn't know there were Ponderosas left.
That's terrific. Yeah, there's Ponderosas.
You were dancing alone in, may I say, our a good dancer. Oh, women love the good grammar. Meaning a good dancing in the dark lady. You had white pants on. If you see this, message me back.
Ponderosa is very much like a Sizzler. There is a salad bar with a sneeze guard.
Yes.
And you get a tent on your table with a number in it. Then they bring you your food. Now, do you tip or do you not? I don't know.
I think I put a few extra dollars when you do it. But, you know, I think the most important thing between the similarities between a Sizzler and a Ponderosa is there's always a hot gray-haired lady in white pants there. Always. Always. Anyhow, so we should move on and get to our guest.
I think we should.
Although I would like to have a threesome with the hot gray-haired lady.
We have a real storyteller here. His name is Jeff Kahn. This guy, folks, he's a writer and an actor and a producer. Now, think this. As an actor, Hannes, think of some of these movies. Just think about them. Tropic Thunder, yeah. Drillbit Taylor, The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Take it way back, The Cable Guy. Let's talk about TV, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Larry Sanders Show. And I happen to know that he played a bellhop on Blossom. So just step off.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's pretty good.
Now, as a TV writer...
Did he breastfeed with Miriam Bialik? I don't know. That's a story for another time.
As a TV writer, he has written for The Ben Stiller Show, Drawn Together, and Dilbert. Now, as an author, he co-wrote the book You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up with his lovely wife, Annabelle Gurwitch. She was recently a guest, and boy, oh boy, did we like her. Am I right?
Yeah, would not shut up.
But she is terrific, I'll say that. Anyway, he's here right now. Jeff Kahn, I'm anxious to hear from him. He's a talented man, and he's here right now. He's going to talk about a threesome. Who doesn't want to hear that? Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Jeff Kahn.
Lisa Berlin was hands down the most radiantly beautiful 19-year-old in the history of 19-year-olds at the University of Wisconsin. We developed a fast and furious friendship that I endlessly hoped would blossom into a pants-off oral sex situation. Alas, for all the laughs and long, meaningful late-night talks, we never so much as kissed, let alone 69'd. Sensing I was forever destined for friendship material and not wanting to sustain such an unrequited purgatory, I gave up on Lisa and began bouncing about campus from futon to futon, luckily landing with some of the cutest of Madison's highly sexualized feminist liberal arts majors. Let me just say this about the whole early to mid-80s PC feminist thing that was happening on campuses back then. Okay, yes, it was annoying and demanded an absurd amount of self-conscious self-censoring. Don't say girls, say woman. Don't say history, say herstory. But if you were willing to play ball with the women of the PC feminist crowd, they were more than happy to take hapless but eager young boys such as myself by the hands, face, and crotch and learn us in the fine art of the female orgasm. And I am so grateful that they did, because when gorgeous Caitlin announced on our first date that she had never had an orgasm, I became a man on a mission. Caitlin wanted nothing more than for me to try to get her off, and when it finally happened, never wanted me to stop. Although sex with Caitlin was narcotically addictive, I told myself, if needs be, I could stop at any time. That chance came a couple months into seeing each other when Caitlin failed to show up for our date at the Ovens of Brittany, a French restaurant whose dishes were culinary cutting edge in pre-war Paris. That war being, of course, the French Revolution. Ticked off at being stood up, I walked over to her off-campus apartment to leave an indignant note on her door. How could I, hyper, hip, college junior, be stood up by her lowly, albeit very hot freshman, who I had been sexually satisfying on a near Guinness Book of Records pace for over a month? When I got to the door, I heard the distinct sounds of the Tom Tom Club song Genius of Love emanating from her room. Someone was home. I knocked and knocked, but no one answered. I can still hear those Tom Tom Club lyrics echoing in my brain to this day. Ipsa mama, I'm in heaven with my boyfriend, my laughing boyfriend. I kept knocking, calling out her name, but all I heard back were those amazingly apropos Tom Tom lyrics. If you see him, please remind him, unhappy boyfriend, unhappy boyfriend. As I was turning to leave, the door swung open, and there stood Caitlin, a blank expression on her face, neither that happy or disappointed to see me. "Why didn't you answer the door?" I asked point blank. "I was sleeping." As she said this, a couple friends of mine appeared behind her. The urbane Whitney, a shock of blonde hair, carefully groomed to seductively fall over his face so that it could partially conceal one eye like a new wave pirate. And his equally polished, erudite girlfriend, Anne, a slender beauty with soft olive skin, dark brown hair, and just the slightest wisp of a bleached mustache. Anne admitted, "We got really smashed and literally passed out." Whitney showed me an empty bottle of high-end tequila as proof. Anne apologized further, claiming it was our fault that Caitlin didn't meet you. We ran into her outside the Memorial Library and asked if she wanted to do shots with us. Caitlin put her long, willowy arms around me and asked if I still wanted to go on our date. The whole drunken falling asleep bit felt odd to me, but I figured stranger things have happened at the University of Wisconsin than three students drinking themselves into a stupor, and left it at that. Later, back at the Ovens of Brittany, or as I preferred to call it, the Ovens of Gluttony, Caitlin suddenly burst into tears. Yes, she, Anne, and Whitney drank a shitload of tequila, but no, they hadn't quite passed out so much as proceeded to shed their clothes and have a threesome. Great, I thought. They had an orgy and failed in spectacular fashion to invite me. Okay, I could have lived without seeing pale, hairless, bone-thin Whitney in the buff, but the idea of getting my hands on Anne's supple breast and butt, let alone watching her and Caitlin go at it, really felt like a missed opportunity for me. I knew that Caitlin was attracted to girls and had pressed her on several occasions to regale me of the dirtiest details of her past bi-girl adventure in my never-ending quest for details when it came to girls having sex with other girls. But this time, I didn't want the particulars because this latest lineup had a guy inserted in the sexual geometry, and that guy wasn't me. Caitlin said she would not blame me if I broke up with her, but she would be devastated because she was in love with me. I was struck by those words. Was that for real? Was that she just saying it to manipulate me into letting her off the hook? An odd way of showing it. Fucking two other people, I told her. "I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I'll never do it again," she promised. "Not without inviting me to the dance, you won't," I replied. "I don't want to share you, Caitlin said, her red eyes looking at me. Well, down at me, since she was 4.5 inches taller. Should I break up with her, I thought. I mean, wasn't it just great, amazing, mildly addictive, I can quit anytime sex that we were having? And even though she promised never to do it again, wouldn't there always be some cloud of mistrust hanging over us? The Tom Tom Club song kept repeating over and over in my mind. He's got a greater depth of feeling. He's a genius of love. I should have broken up with her, but there was something stopping me. Something I hadn't counted on, and the realization was hitting me so hard, so fast, and so unexpectedly, I felt like it could literally knock me off my feet. During the time we had been seeing each other, I had been so myself around her. I didn't have to pretend to be some over-the-top, gung-ho, PC feminist guy to be invited onto her futon, and I wasn't forced to suffer the sting of sexless exile in the unrequited lands of male friendship. Caitlin and I had freakishly good fucking, but we also had fun together that went beyond the genitals. We made up silly characters that spoke in high voices and meowed at each other like cats in heat. We saw movies and plays and hung out for hours at the student union listening to jukebox music and ridiculing pretentious people like Whitney, not knowing that she was going to have a threesome with him. We laughed a lot, great, hard, deep, life-affirming laughter. I didn't want to break up with Caitlin, even though she had threesomed without me, because I really liked having her in my life and I didn't want to lose her presence in it. I didn't say any of this to her. That would be letting her off too easy, and I wanted her pangs of guilt to inflame the tons of makeup sex and good old-fashioned 69ing that was surely to be had later in bed that night. It might not have been as thrilling as her threesome, but let me assure you, it was pretty damn close.
All I can say is the Ovens of Brittany. You know, when you haven't heard a phrase in 30 years, and suddenly you go, wait, I know that place. I can picture it.
What was that? Well, the Ovens of Brittany was
a French restaurant.
But what is Brittany?
Brittany is a
region of France.
Oh my gosh. I'm only seeing a girl's name.
Right. It was before.
Yes, it's the Ovens of
Spears.
It was the Ovens of Brittany. Yeah. It's named after a California
girl.
Well,
no, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing the Brittany. Brittany
and the coast of Brittany.
The Côte d'Azur?
No,
that's the south. This is the north.
This is the northwest.
So near Belgium.
Closer to Belgium, yes, on the North Atlantic. And that's, we landed on Brittany.
Right,
no,
right.
Normandy.
Like
we landed
Calais.
In
Calais
right,
is
near
up there.
Normandy.
Yes. Wow. They make Camembert cheese there.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Jeff Kahn, you're a good writer, man.
Well, it's I better be.
May I
can't
ask
do
you
else.
A few questions about
writing?
Well,
apparently you can 69 like a mofo.
Well, you know.
Well, yeah.
That's something that goes by the wayside as you get a little older. You'd like to 69,
you gotta
but
keep
there's 69-ing. A lot of joints involved.
What? Well, I don't know. You got to keep 69ing, I think. It hurts the neck, I think, more as you get older.
Now, I will say this, as long as you're
cranking and
Jeff, as long as you're mentioning that, in your book, You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, that you wrote with your wife, Annabelle Gurwitch, one of the first things you say is that at the end of the day, you want her to sit on your face.
Right.
Aww.
Well, I said, unlike some of my best, all of my best friends, like Evan Gore, who's my best friend, I don't want to, shake hands with him and bump fists goodnight.
Right.
I prefer that Annabelle sits on my face.
Okay. Okay. And just the one of her then. You don't need two women. The one is good. There.
Well, is that a trick question?
Well,
Taking turns sitting on my face? Knowing Annabelle, she'd probably be too tired, so maybe I would actually need that other
one.
She
does have a lot of energy to me.
Yes, I know. To you.
May I just say...
To you it seems like energy.
Yes.
To him it sounds like a constant buzz of a bee that's stuck inside his earlobe.
No, the energy that you get is the good Annabelle Gurwitch.
Yeah.
She's the good witch.
She has a...
I get the bad witch.
No, oh my gosh,
I get the bad Gurwitch.
She is all good, really. We love Annabelle Gurwitch and your book with her.
Wow.
Jeff is looking at me like, okay, I've been married to this woman for 14 years.
I'm so
14
glad
years.
Once. It's going to be 16 years. And I'm so glad that she has a spotless public persona.
The fact of the matter is I've read a lot of things that she's written and I've seen her on TV and I've watched her YouTube stuff and I've seen her. She's
that's
so quick-witted.
That's her all the way.
I mean, she's Bill Maher's, one of Bill Maher's good friends. I think she spars with him as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I read your book, You Say Tomato, I Shut Up, Say Shut Up. By the way, available on Amazon.com. How do you get there, Hannes?
You go through the storyworthypodcast.com website.
Blah, blah, blah.
And you buy You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up. You buy 50 Shades of Grey. You buy some Civil War pornography, and it's a night.
Jeff,
Civil War porn.
I really, really, really enjoy the book.
Thank you.
And what you and your wife have done is you've taken this book, you've taken it across the country,
mm-hmm.
and you've been in all sorts of theaters.
Right.
And now you essentially sold that play, and other people perform it. Is that true?
We went out with the book as a tour, and then we had a sort of a comedy show that was based on the book, and we went out with that. And then we'd use that sometimes when we were on tour. And then we were approached by a producer in New York who thought, hey, this would be a great, very cheap two-person play to produce.
It's a wonderful play.
And they could send it out, and two actors could do it after we developed it. So we did it for a while, and then two actors are doing Jeff and Annabelle.
I think that's so wonderful.
And probably having a lot more sex.
They're probably having a lot of sex with each other.
Do they use your names for real? Do they use the names Jeff and Annabelle?
Yeah, they do.
Isn't that flattering? The first Jeff was so good. Yeah,
because I work with this cast that I was hoping that he would come out and just take my place.
Did you want to be
my
him?
Own life?
Yeah.
No, I wanted him to be me.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny about names. I just want to say so. I do have to point out that of course another Wisconsin connection. Jeff was the roommate of Evan Kahn. I'm sorry, Evan. Jeff
Evan,
was the roommate
Evan
of
Kahn
Evan
was
who,
his maiden name.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Evan, who I've known since the first grade, Gore. And so I met him many years ago in Wisconsin. We haven't actually talked in a long time, and then I talked to him on the phone about coming on here, and he informed me. He said, "Hey, you know what? It's funny that you would call me because I have a meeting about a pilot that I'm selling or have already sold, and I named a character in the pilot, Hannes Finney."
Wow, yeah. No kidding.
I'd already
fun.
Sold it.
Wow, yeah.
And
that's
he
really
said,
interesting.
Do you want me to change it? And I thought, well, It's a yes and no, kind of like, well, it's so complimentary.
What's the no?
But it's
that's
my
like when
name.
You told me, what am I so worried about firing a manager I didn't
because
have?
Your name is Christine Blackburn, and they could easily have a name Christine Blackburn.
I know, but that's, you always get on me, Hannes, about worrying about things that haven't happened yet.
Well,
so what are you worrying about?
I just, I don't
changed
know.
The name.
He ended up changing the name.
His name is now Agnes McFadden.
Angus McFadden.
Yeah.
Angus McFadden. Yeah. So I went from very German to very...
Scottish.
Scary Scottish, yes,
Jeff
exactly.
Jeff Kahn, I really, really am interested about your writing process. Let me just ask you a few simple questions.
Right.
Do you have your own office? Home, as it were.
Yeah, I don't really use it anymore.
Really? So you just take
your
laptop?
It became sort of like an Annabelle storage place, and then it just became a room that we went to fight in. It's because it was outside of the house, so we didn't want to fight in front of Ezra, which we do anyway because that's so bad. So if the fights got really bad, then they'd end up in my office.
Ezra,
and then it's just the memory of just every fight that we have there is just permeating in the walls and the woodwork, and I'm just like, you know what? This is a dark place.
I don't want to be – this isn't my office.
No, I just take my – I write at home. I take my – I have to drive all the time, like about 50 miles a day. So for my son, picking him up and driving him to baseball.
Like Ezra, Ezra is your teenage son, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And what are his activities? School and what?
He goes to school in Reseda. It's about 800 miles from here on the 101. And
that's called the Valley, I believe.
Yes, deep in the valley.
Deep Valley.
That's Deep Valley.
Reseda is what people think the Valley is. Like, you know.
Right.
It's like people like, you know, you're in Studio City, it's the Valley. It's like, no, Studio City is very sophisticated. Burbank's awesome. It's a lot of fun. You go to Reseda and you're like, I'm in a fucking valley.
Well, if it's like 90 degrees in Los Feliz, it's 459 degrees in Reseda.
That's how that works out. That's the actual. So are you saying that you take your laptop with you?
I just write everywhere. I write in the car. I write in Starbucks. I write in restaurants. I write during his baseball games. I write when I'm on the toilet.
And let me ask you, I just
constantly write. And you know, I write when I'm sleeping.
So let's say the story that you read tonight. I'm just throwing that out there. Let's just say it's about 1,000 words. Is that about right?
No.
How many words is this?
It's 1,300.
1,300 words.
In Reseda, it's 2,500 words.
So you seem to craft your words so specifically. It's like you go over and over and over. I'm just curious. How long would it take you to write one piece? So this was your piece about a threesome or whatever. So
this is a part of this is a chapter. The book I'm writing is called Lust and Found.
Lust and Found.
Lust and Found, an erotic, neurotic memoir.
I love that.
And so the first 8 chapters of the book are under the heading of lust. And they're like the early chapters of my lusting. And then there's and chapters that are sort of between the lust and the found. And these are in the and chapters because I'm still sort of searching for love and I'm lusting and I'm making terrible mistakes. They're a lot of college stuff. It's actually.
But let me ask you something. You say this, and I can tell because you're a comic and you're a you're a comic writer.
Uh-huh.
You say this in complete fodder, as it
were.
What
do you mean?
Because your wife is beautiful and talented and funny and gorgeous, and you want her to sit on your face.
Right.
No, but you are completely in love.
Yeah, but I mean, so what though?
Well, so what?
I was in love with Lisa Berlin. It didn't help me there either.
Come on now. What I'm saying is that you have such a heart. Okay, this book.
It didn't help me at all with Lisa Berlin. Actually, I did better with Lisa Berlin than I have with Annabelle after 16 years.
You say so many beautiful.
I can just switch them.
You say beautiful things about your wife before you really twist the nail in the coffin, as it were.
Okay,
I don't know if that's an expression, but
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just never heard twist the nail in the coffin before.
Yeah, that's good.
I just made that up.
Yeah, by the way, you twist screws and you pound nails, but it's okay. You're a girl. You wouldn't know about carpentry. Let's get Adam Carolla in here. And he can. Now, what you're doing is like, yes, he loves her. And you're like, as a woman, you're like, well, love is sweetness and light and daffodils and pink unicorns. But men are like, it's like, yes, I love her. She still drives me up a fucking wall. That is like completely not two opposite things for men to think. Is that a way of explaining it?
I mean, she's sort of the male of our relationship. And
really?
Yeah, she's the male and I'm the female. We have a very swapped romantic sentimentality. She's not romantic. She's not sentimental. Uh-huh. She doesn't remember birthdays or anniversaries
sometimes
she doesn't remember I'm in the house. I mean, I'm just like, oh my God, where did you come from?
You said that she once almost bought you a Christmas or a Hanukkah gift, But then maybe 6 months later, she mentioned.
She's like, oh, God. Yeah. I said, "Where didn't you buy me the Christmas gift?" And I said, "What happened to that?" Because she kept saying, "It's perfect. I finally found the perfect thing for you." She said, "Oh, the company went out of business, so they couldn't ship it."
Well, wow. Okay.
That was almost a gift.
That is actually the manliest excuse I've ever heard. I waited so long, they went out of business.
So real quick, let's back up real quick. How long does it take you to write a chapter? I just want to know.
There's the first getting it out, and then I just keep rewriting it and rewriting it. And if I'm going to perform it or stew it at a sit and spin or whatever, then I'll tweak it to make it a little bit more concise and less wordy,
mm-hmm.
because most of these places like don't want you to go over 1,400 words or 1,500 words or 5 minutes or you know what. So right. I gotta. So I'll like keep cutting it, and then I'll usually like that, and then I'll rework that back into the. I just keep rewriting all the
time. So in other words, as an artist, you never really finish the thing.
Well, I get finished when the check comes and I cash it.
So like this book, so all these chapters in the book, you say tomato, I say shut up. You feel like I'm pretty satisfied with that.
I was pretty satisfied with that.
Good.
There was a lot of rewriting.
I was very satisfied as a writer.
When you started performing it, did you rewrite then?
Well, we were performing it sort of, we'd started before and then I don't know, they kind of informed each other. I don't know if we rewrote because of the performance.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But we, you know, and then we wrote a play. So the play was different too. That was hell.
The play that you sold that we're talking about.
Well, it is. We were commissioned to write a play that's now on tour. And that was a horrible.
Yeah, why was that
done.
So horrible? Tell
because
us.
Because I had
details.
To write it with Annabelle and it wasn't he said, she said.
Right.
It was Annabelle just, said, Annabelle said.
Because our book is he said. So I would write my. Chapters,
version.
Right. And I'd rewrite them and rewrite them. Then I'd give them to Annabelle and then she would critique them and tell me how bad they were. And I would do the same to her and there would be yelling and screaming and no sex. And then when we were finally, you know, satisfied with, you know, how unsatisfied we were with, you know, said, oh, it's like a truce. Like, okay, I can't work on it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, I guess it's done then. And then, but doing a play, we'd have to like sit together. You know, I did the first few drafts and then we were just like sitting together and it was, and we were acting together. We'd be on stage. We're great on stage. We're very good on stage because we do all the things you're supposed to do in a relationship. We listen to each other. We have each other's back. We want the show to go well. We're like a team.
Speak when you're supposed to speak.
Right. Lights go out. It's like, oh, fuck you. You know, and then we're starting the whole thing.
And you're going to go to a hotel together.
Yes. Well,
you spend the night, you're going to go get on an airplane.
Yeah, or we were living in New York for a while.
I see.
Yeah, we lived in an apartment.
Yeah, but there's in a long-term relationship, there's no better sex than hotel sex or perhaps the apartment that you're only going to be in for 3 months. Sex.
Yeah.
So you want to have a lot of that.
Okay,
especially when your son is in the next room.
There's two things that I want to talk about. I want to talk about your son, Ezra. Can
right.
you just tell him three sentences about Ezra? He must be a really special kid. Am I right?
He's absolutely incredible, and for his just before he turned 14 last year, I caught him smoking pot.
What did you do? Does he have a card? Does he have a card?
He has a card. He has a medical card. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the most surreal moment of my entire life.
So what happened?
It was like, you know, it was like a typical, and this is actually in the book. This is going to be one of the big ending chapters. It was a typical day. He was coming home from baseball practice, which he was doing twice a week. It drove him home. Annabelle was a typical day, wasn't there. She was in New York, typical day. She's not there. And so I'm driving him thousands of miles, and I cook him dinner. So I'm going to cook him dinner. He says, I'm going to go up and take a shower. So I said, fine. So I was like, thought, well, I'll ask him what he wants for dinner. And I walked up the stairs of our house, and I was like, God, that smells like skunk. And I was like, that's not skunk. And then I was like, this really can't be happening. And then I got to the bathroom and it was locked. And I'm like, Ezra, open up the fucking door. You can't be, you know, you're fucking smoking pot in there. Go open up the fucking door. You know, it's like suddenly I'm in some sort of John Hughes movie.
Yeah.
Where I'm the antagonist. I'm the hypocritical pot smoking, you know, deviant dad who's now going to come down on his own son, you know, for doing everything I've ever done. So he opens up the door. The windows are open. He's got this look on his face, which was really the same look as the girl in the story. That blank look of like, not happy, not sad, but I'm just trying. I'm trying to think what I'm going to. I've never been in this situation.
What does he know? What does he know, Luke?
Right. What is he going to say? He's going to turn 14, and in his 14 years, he's never been confronted with a situation where he absolutely doesn't know how to act or what to say. So he's like, what? I didn't do anything. That was his first thing. So I was like, okay, you're smoking pot, so shut the fuck up and tell me where you got it and how long you've been doing. I really came down on him. And and after the whole thing, he just said, don't tell mom.
Aww.
Right.
You told her, didn't you?
Oh, good. Yeah, I had to tell her.
Yeah, because it's kind of cool in a way. I mean, not cool.
But I didn't tell her in New York. I didn't call her up and go, guess what, Annabelle?
No, I know.
Our son is taking after you.
So
yes. And she said,
because I didn't really smoke a lot of pot.
I can hardly wait to sit on your face, she said.
What yes. do you say to your son?
Like, that's what I said. I said, you know what I said? I said, look, you cannot smoke pot at 14, 15, 16. We know now what we didn't know then is that it's not good for the teenage brain. You've got to wait.
Right. In other
you
words,
you've got to wait. You've got to try to wait. You got to promise you can't do this because it's going to screw up your life. And you know, and I'm just, you know, I had to say to him, look, it's, you know, look at me. See the damage it's done. I'm an idiot. You're a great student. I was a terrible student. You're an amazing musician. I was a terrible musician. You're a really cool guy. I thought I was a cool guy. You're an athlete. You're a musician. You know, just don't do it. Just try not to do it.
Well, it's very cool that you talk to him like man on man, as it were.
Man on man.
Man on man. Yep. I like that.
Yep.
Hey, man, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yeah, you'd rather do that than keep talking about my life. It's fine.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do it. That music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game show where contestants spin the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tell a true one-minute story on the topic they land.
So everyone, say it with me.
Spin that wheel.
Okay, one night I went out and I drank on an empty stomach. I drank two vodkas on an empty stomach, like gimlets. They were like, these are delicious. They're so freaking delicious. So as I'm driving home, I'm like halfway home. I'm like, God, I am so fucked up. I can't even see. I don't know what it just like hit me really hard. So it was a cold night and I went upstairs and I got into the tub and I let that warm water run and rush over me. And boy, it felt so good. And when I fell asleep on the tub and flooded the entire bathroom and the kitchen downstairs and the dining room. And then Annabelle actually caught me in the tub and saw the flood and said that she would probably never have sex with me again after this. I have been in the doghouse ever since. The end.
All right. See, that's how you play the game, Honest. He kept it right under a minute, and he stayed on topic.
He looked at the topic, drunk tank. He said, I got nothing. And we looked at him like,
you've been drunk.
Well, you better fucking come up with something, buddy. By the way, you went to the University of Wisconsin.
I was a joke.
Yeah.
And let me ask you.
And this time I threw up outside of the roundhouse. And this time I threw up inside of the roundhouse.
You have written for a lot of comedians like Ben Stiller, Jim Brewer, some different people. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true.
And did you grow up with Ben Stiller? What's your connection?
We met out here when I was trying to get an agent during the actor strike of 1988.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really smart move on my part to come here. I was crashing on Evan and I were roommates with Joan Cusack in high school. So we grew up in the Cusack family. And John graciously invited me out to sleep on his sofa. Yes, he was very kind to me while he was filming Anything.
Yeah, he really made it big early, didn't he?
Yeah, he was young. He was like 17.
Yeah.
So I was crashing on his sofa, and he was at the height of his height. I mean, he was the pinnacle of John Cusack, and he was just about to reach that Say Anything moment where he was like an icon. And this is the thing about guys, which is unbelievable. And yet, with all of it, with girls actually throwing themselves at him, literally, of every age and variety, he said, I only have one rule, Jeff, and that is that you don't get in my way when it comes to girls. I was like, oh, my God. If I'm going to be an impediment to your penis, boy, I
yeah, but
I was like, fine, hey, that's easy for me to do. I'll stay right out of that way. because I'm sure, you know, Winona Ryder is going to want to sleep with me because I'm broke and sleeping on your sofa and I have no job or future.
So how does this connect to Ben Stiller?
So Ben also came to
sleep on the
crash at John's house because they had done this film together. Soon everybody's there. Jeremy Piven's sleeping there. Lily Taylor's there. Joan comes out. Then Ben comes out, and Ben and I, we were designated to share a room together. It was like a hotel. And Ben doesn't like to share a room with anybody. So he immediately moved out of that room. And I was like, you know, who's this guy? And he was to me, who's that guy? And for some reason, we just, with mutual animosity, I started making him laugh. And because I didn't really know who he was. And I think not knowing who Ben Stiller was is a huge plus to Ben Stiller because he had grown up with everybody linking him to his parents.
And that's what I was going to say, because of his parents.
And since I didn't put, because I'm so stupid and naive, and I don't put I don't put two and two together. I just think he's another schmuck like me who's sleeping in John Cusack's house because he doesn't have a job or an agent. So it's like,
and he has like lineage.
He, not only that, he's like there to meet his agents. And, you know, and then, you know, by the time we get all this information out, he just feels bad for me.
Oh.
And he actually helped me get an agent. He said, and then he moved, and then he did a movie in Chicago, and he said, hey, I have some money from this gangster, literally, to shoot a short movie, and he wants me to expand it from 15 minutes to a half an hour, and would you care to, you know, help me write it? And this, I was like, yeah, I had never written before.
That's terrific. Wow.
And then we cast, cast as many of my friends as I could get in it.
You had not written before.
I had not written formally before.
But what were you trying to do then?
Do like, you know.
You were being an actor.
Actor, improv.
You seem to have been a waiter in many, many situations. Why is that?
A waiter.
A waiter, food service industry.
Server, I was a waiter.
Bellhop.
Yeah. Right, yes.
What is that?
Because I can be, because I'm the world's worst waiter.
You're every man.
I am the worst waiter. I was fired from every restaurant I worked in Chicago. I actually lost money in one restaurant where I was asked to keep the change because I'm also incredibly bad in math. So I ended up owing the restaurant money after my shift. And then they fired me anyway. I'm like, well, I'm paying you and you're firing me?
Yeah. Waitering is a hard job, man.
It is very hard. It demands.
Your time and all of your senses.
It's true, and you need to. I have the wrong personality. I am impatient. I'm quick tempered, and I have no sense of
courtesy.
I have no sense of courtesy, or you know, when I'm angry, like I can't control it. So
that's exactly
really
why
bad.
I'm
disorganized.
Oh, I never became a waiter.
You would be a terrifying waiter.
No.
Your fucking nachos.
I would literally
bother.
Have killed someone
you
early in my career, would've. And I something in my head said, don't even try.
I was an excellent waitress and probably one of the only things I do well. I'll be honest with you. I'm just saying. I did it very well because I say, hello, hello.
Is
your mind organized enough to take?
Yes, but now I don't have the strength because honestly, I'm 46 years old and I don't think I can waitress anymore to the extent that you would have to be. You know what I mean? Keep up. You know, like House of Pies, Fred 62, Palermo's. I think of these restaurants nearby. And these girls are 24 and 26 because you got to move. And when you're done with your shift, it's like you got beat up.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm too old. I can't have it.
My first job was for some reason I got hired at a very formal business luncheon place on Wacker called the River Club.
Mm-hmm.
And it boasted this floor. What it was on the river. So it boasted floor to ceiling. Window so you could see Chicago's two seasons, Arctic and too fucking hot. and we were told that we were supposed to learn the French style of serving, which I serve from the left. I don't know. I never learned.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was really awful, but we were supposed to be, you know, courteous and professional.
And you're in black and white tie.
Black and white. And one day I was walking out with an overloaded tray of food, badly balanced, and it fell.
Ooh.
And there was like it tumbled to the ground with like fettuccine Alfredo and pork cutlets, cheese and pork and dishes, and it's breaking. And I tried to think of what I should say in the most professional, calm demeanor, so that, you know, they would know that I was a world class waiter. And the only thing that came out of my mouth was, "Fuck me!"
I knew that was
at the
coming.
Top of my lungs.
I knew that was coming,
and I was fired on the spot.
Okay, we got to wrap this up, but I want to ask you: Lust and Love is
Lust and Found.
Lust and Found. I'm sorry. Lust and Found. And it is nonfiction.
It is a memoir. It's an erotic memoir.
And a memoir of Jeff's penis. Yes. Let's go right.
It's not just my penis that gets play.
Okay.
There's fingers. There's faces.
Good.
There's,
interesting. Is there any anal toys?
There's anal. Of course
fair.
There's anal.
I'm glad you're fair. Look,
of course there's
look,
anal.
Look, if there's not there's, shit there, in the bed, it's not a robust life, love life. You know what I'm saying?
Wait. Say that again.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
I got
wrap this up. I want to ask you this, though. When you're writing a memoir, Lust and Found, do you go to the publisher you had before? Do you go to the You Say Tomato, I Say Shit?
I will probably go to the agent that published You Say Tomato. And if she likes it, which is a huge, I don't know.
Right.
Because she's, you know, she's, this is a really tough time in publishing.
Sure.
She would go out to every publishing house. It wouldn't be Random House, or it would be everywhere.
And
it wouldn't just be the one. I don't think.
And your lovely wife Annabelle is writing fucking 50.
Right.
And she does the same thing.
She is also working right now with the same agent. So I don't know what their plan is, but I don't think they would give Random House a first crack. They might. I don't know. I don't think it works that way.
So it's just a process, isn't it? The whole thing is a process. There's no really end game, is there?
Yeah, the end game is you selling your stuff, and that's always the end game, is just trying to make a
sale.
But
then the next thing has to be sold.
But now there's this, you know, I mean, people are publishing their own stuff on Amazon, and it might be the way to go, and it might also be the future, because publishing is getting more and more narrow and narrow and narrow, and it's harder to, and they don't have any money, and they don't promote their books, and it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, we don't have the money to pay for it, to market it. So they publish books. They don't give a lot of money. They don't market it. People don't buy them. They only buy 50 Shades of Grey, and that's it. And the whole industry is drying up.
But the idea would be that they might give you a small advance, but you'll never make it back, as it were. Or you'd get some money, but you won't sell that many books to get further than that.
Well, they won't even, you know, not going to invest unless they think they're going to sell some books.
Wow.
So I think it's a pretty tough business right now.
Would you like to be ideally in the TV writing business, the movie writing business, or the book writing business, or the actor as a waiter business?
I'd like to be in the business where of the banking business,
yeah,
where you go into a bank and they say, how much do you want? And I go, I don't know, 100 grand.
I hear you there,
and,
brother.
And they said, okay, that would be a great business.
That is good.
I don't know. I like to write. You know, that's what I do. I can't do anything else. But right, and 69.
And you do it so well. I don't know about the 69 part.
Oh, no,
but
no.
Well, writing, you know very well.
He did send us a video clip to prove that he's good at 69. Oh, I'm sorry, you didn't get that?
No.
That was just
I think
me.
Evan would attest that I'm pretty good at 69.
Yeah, I just want to ask the question. In the future, in the next year, if your book gets picked up and your wife's doesn't, or vice versa,
right?
What is the atmosphere of the Con Gerwich home going to be?
It's a good question.
If one of you is published.
I think it's the Gerwich Con home, but I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah,
she's wearing the dildo. It's true. Okay. I'm sorry.
She wears the dildo. It's the new expression with screwing the last nail in the coffin.
Exactly.
It won't matter to Annabelle as long as there's some money coming in. I don't think she's going to... I mean, she would definitely lord it over me. She would lord it over me. Let me face it. She'll be like, I'm working, you know? And when I work, you know, it's like... It's all about whether she's working or not, and that's the most important thing that's
happening.
You
are so in love, and you are so smitten with your wife of 14 years. I think it's beautiful.
15,
whatever.
You keep lessening.
I think it's beautiful.
Well, I'm glad somebody does.
Well, I get the facetiousness, but I still think it's very beautiful. There,
right.
I said it.
Well, I love it.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. I'd like to thank a couple of people. First off, John Thomas Griffith. You know, he wrote our theme song, Hannes.
He did. He wrote a theme song. Or his original theme song was 6969. I love it. And we decided that was too narrow.
So we changed it to Follow Me. That's exactly right.
Right. Follow Me into Orgasm Land. That was what I said should be the slogan, but he said,
I'd also like
who
to
the fuck
thank
you?
Jorge Reyes. He's our sound engineer. He makes us sound
recently
good
engaged.
Every week. Recently engaged.
Recently married.
He got married.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
so
I would say.
Jeff is saying, read the book and look at your fucking future.
I'd also
run
like
the wind, he says.
Hang Joe Slepsky. He's our producer, and gosh darn it, he helps us out every week. Honest, we couldn't do it without Joe Slepsky.
He's engaged,
and
right?
Of course, okay, yeah, he's engaged. Okay. Now, look, Joe's engaged. You've been engaged for a decade and a half. Jorge fucking sealed the deal. He's married because he's from Guatemala, and they have class.
Yeah, and they also have Catholic guilt.
Jeff is married. I'm twice divorced. I don't know what's going on.
Twice. I know. Jeff is impressed.
Wow. Ladies good. And gentlemen, I'd That's also excellent. Like to thank our storyteller tonight, Jeff Kahn. You can find his book, You Say Tomato, I Say Shut Up, at Amazon.com. Thank you, Jeff.
Don't call it just his book. The wife will beat him when he gets home.
Jeff Kahn and Annabelle Gurwitch, yes, of course. And, of course, on behalf of you, Hannah Spinney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Ovens and Brittany!
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.